brings me back to my childhood. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we're joined by one of my absolute favorite people in the industry. And before so, Nisha's got her family in town. Her husband's family is in town, and so she's doing all kinds of family stuff. Brian is driving across Kansas as we speak, heading to Kansas Sherm. So one thing I'll tell you about Kansas Sherm, follow the hashtag because there's going to be some great speakers over there, and it's always just great content. So I think it's KSSHRM13 as a hashtag. But you can try a couple variations of that and find the right one. But definitely follow that, and I think he'll be on the show tomorrow. But without any further ado, Joyce, how are you doing today?
I am doing spectacularly today. I am, I'm a busy girl, but working on interesting things.
It could be worse, right?
It could be much, much worse, yes. Go ahead.
I got to close the book on something. You at one point ran for political office, right?
I know.
That we talked about it. What? Because I don't want to ask, but I do want to ask because we talked about it on the show. Like, what did you learn from that whole process?
Well, so let me first tell your listening audience if anybody recalls. Yeah, I think I talked to you back in April, and at that time I was running for select woman in my town, which in small New England towns like mine is what is the executive branch of the government. And I was running against an 18-year incumbent, and the punchline is I did not win. However, I lost by a very small margin, and which was a big surprise to a lot of people. So I have to say, so what did I learn? I mean, for one thing, I got a whole new appreciation of people who campaign for public office, because for 3 or 4 solid months ahead of the election, I was out every night at any gathering of more than 2 people in my town to pitch my cause. So I think, what I learned is that it's a lot harder to run than perhaps it looks, and you eat a lot of really bad catered food. But the other thing is it really is one vote at a time. And, I think whether it's on the national scale or the local scale, people want to pick somebody that they feel like they really know something about and that they can connect with. And, I did a lot of, door to door and house parties and that kind of stuff. And, was actually quite pleased with the vote, that I got. So, not sure I will run again, but it was a very, very, in the balance, it was a very positive experience. Ringing doorbells when it's 10 degrees out, not so much, but overall it was a very, very positive experience. So I met a lot of new people I didn't know in my town and, learned a lot about what it takes to run a political campaign.
Well, you wonder how those gals and those guys don't stay sick the whole time, right?
shaking
that many hands.
Well, it's shaking the hands, and it's also, I think we criticize leaders about the blandness of their communication sometimes, and that people don't sort of allow themselves to be pinned down to a particular position. And what you learn very quickly when you're out shaking hands with voters is, most people have a particular issue that they're really passionate about. And so to position yourself to be elected, it can be dangerous, frankly, to take a pretty strong position on one side of an issue or another publicly. So, I feel like I was very honest throughout my campaign. But at the same time was probably more moderate in some of my publicly expressed views than the way I actually feel about them. So, that was a lesson, too, that how quickly you could turn somebody off or on, based on a fairly, what I might consider to be a fairly minor issue is somebody else's major issue.
Wow. There's so many great learns in that. I mean, it was a great experience. And like you said, you're going up against an incumbent, somebody that's kind of done all this shtick before. And so it was an uphill battle no matter what. But you know, great learns along the way, both professionally and personally. And I like the fact that you met a lot of people in your town. So if you got nothing else out of this, you now are probably one of the more connected people in your town.
No, exactly. I made new friends, you know, like legitimate friends that, you know, we're staying connected with. So, and I live in a really small town, 3,500 citizens. So, and I've lived there 28 years, and still, you know, you meet people. I met a Nobel Prize winner that I didn't even know lived in our town, like one of the international experts on climate change. So that was cool. So, you know, it was that, like I said, great learning experience. Whether or not I'll do it again, I would have to seriously consider that, because it was a full-time, you know, project outside of work.
Nice. Well, you know, we jump right into it, and I just assume everyone knows you. Why don't you do me a favor and or do the audience a favor and back up, introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're doing now and who all you represent, et cetera.
Sure. Well, my name's Joyce Maroney. I work for Kronos Incorporated, and at Kronos I'm responsible for the Workforce Institute at Kronos, which is a think tank, if you will, that focuses on issues that are relevant to people who manage a workforce, and William is on the board of that institute for me, which I really appreciate. In addition to the Workforce Institute, I manage our Voice of the Customer program here, our reference programs, and also the marketing of our services. So at Kronos, I've been here for just past my 7th anniversary at Kronos, but I have been working in the software world for about 35 years, and since 1999, that has been exclusively in software for the human capital management arena. So at this point, I guess I'm fairly experienced with human capital software. I am very experienced in the software industry in general. And so I am a big fan of technology. I use technology in every aspect of my life. And I know one of the things we wanted to talk about today was, you know, how do you unplug when you're very dependent on technology? You know, the other thing I would talk about today, if you're interested, is we're just rolling out a new performance management process at Kronos. Our fiscal year actually ends on September 30th. So this is the period of the year when we're kicking off the performance management process, which is always a love-hate relationship we have with those processes and those tools. So that's the thing that's keeping me up at night right now, is just getting through all of the year-end stuff and kicking off the new year with a good set of goals, and also making sure that all of this stuff is registered correctly in our new system.
What Joyce didn't tell you there is she picks winners. That's what she does. What she's really good at is picking winners. She did wonderful work with Brass Ring very early stage, when Brass Ring isn't the Brass Ring that we probably remember now. You know, there are two kind of trees in HCM. On the West Coast, it's PeopleSoft, and on the East Coast, it's Brass Ring. Joyce can tell you where the bodies are buried, all the stories of the early days of Brass Ring. She probably won't tell us on the radio show, but you know, the point is she picks winners. And after Brass Ring, she went over to Kronos, and Kronos has gone through just a wonderful rebirth. I mean, the Kronos of 5 years ago, let's say, dominant time and attendance, workforce management, probably has always been, you know, or at least always kind of, in my mind, always been dominant in that arena. But they've gone through, y'all have just gone through kind of a renaissance and rebranding a lot of the, you know, building out, rebuilding the UI and kind of building out different products and different features. And now you wake up and it's like getting people to relearn or rethink Kronos is, you know, just like you said, you're rolling out this brand new, you know, this product set that kind of makes sense for your audience. What's, Well, you know, you've had to get people to rethink companies before. You did it with Brashery. You're obviously you're doing it, you know, that type of work with Kronos. What's the hardest thing to do when you're trying to get people that kind of know you for something, or they think they know you for something, and you're trying to change their mind and get you to get them to know you for something else?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when you have your vendor hat on, you know, at the end of the day, you always care about growing your business. I mean, if you can't grow a business, then you can't stay in business. So selling product to your intended market is job number one. Now, in order to, you know, Brass Ring was kind of a different story than Kronos. When I started at Brass Ring, there were about maybe 40 employees, and we had yet to hit the $1 million mark. And the notion of SaaS as a delivery model was pretty new. And the people that we were selling to, who were generally speaking either VPs of HR, or if a company was big enough and there was an executive in charge of recruiting, it would be that executive. And people's minds were blown at the idea that you would get this resume data off of, you know, paper and emails and get it into a database that would live in the cloud and wouldn't be living in file cabinets at their offices. So, you know, that we weren't just in the market to sell our product. We had to sell the whole idea of SaaS and managing something in the cloud. And so, you know, before we could even, you know, get into any kind of product demo or whatever, you know, you had to sell why that was going to be better and more valuable for the customers. So, you know, I had, you know, going back to Brass Ring days, I had an extraordinary experience there. I was hired to essentially create the customer experience above and beyond the product itself. And at various times I was responsible for both all of our customer-facing services as well as product management. And, you know, that just, you know, when you ask, you know, what it takes and what do you learn, you have to deliver a tool that is going to be easy for people to use and easy for them to roll out in their companies, and that's going to solve a problem in a significant way. And sometimes, you know, those of us in the world of software, you know, if you start putting things in the product just because you can, or you start customizing products to a very particular customer's needs and it doesn't really work for everybody else, you know, it can be very hard to balance those competing priorities of, you know, earning that next customer's business and balancing what are the resources I need to continue to deliver a great experience every day to the people who are already our customers. And, you know, I think so, you know, when I left Brass Ring, it was a $50 million company, and obviously I learned a ton along the way about what was it going to take to convince people to trust us that we could pull off what we were proposing in this new SaaS model. Our product grew and expanded and became better and better over the 6-plus years that I was there, but it wasn't without a lot of, you know, long nights and working weekends and you know, taking a lot of phone calls and visiting a lot of customers to make sure we were staying on track with them. And you know, then I came to Kronos, which, of course, was a much more mature company when I came, and I think the secret to success at Kronos, which is now, by the way, we'll have our 36th anniversary in October, the secret to success here, which has certainly predated my time here, is that there's always been a very rigorous focus on how can we make sure that our products are solving the problems that our customers want to solve, you know, as easily as possible. How do we make it easy for the customers to use the products? You mentioned a new user interface. There have been many generations of new user interfaces. But it really always still comes back to knowing who your customer is, knowing what their life is like at work, knowing where your solution fits into their life at work, and making sure that you're really tailoring the solution and the functionality in the solution to solving the real problems that that person has every day. And, you know, so for Kronos, that has certainly meant innovating on our core products, but it's also meant adding more and more capabilities to the product line over time that are adjacent to that core time and attendance business problem. So we're closing in on being a billion-dollar company. That's a pretty major milestone for us, but I would say this company has never lost its focus on what's most important, and that is, are we delivering the customer the experience and the value they expected when they signed up with Kronos?
You know, Joyce, you said solving real problems three times, and I love that because during my presentations, I always talk about mainlining feedback, like getting weaving it into your psyche that your feedback isn't a once a 6 months, every year we do a feedback loop. Like it's having this rigor around always knowing what's going on with your customers from a feedback perspective. But you're even talking about something more specific with solving real problems. How do y'all go about that? I mean, you don't have to give any of the secret sauce, but just like, How do you always kind of know that y'all are solving their problems?
Well, we get feedback from our customers through a bunch of different channels, both formal and informal. So on the formal side, we have a pretty robust, and if I say so myself, best in class, formal voice of the customer program. So, you know, we're using a pretty sophisticated platform to generate both transaction or service experience specific surveys as well as an annual, you know, how are we doing overall kind of survey. So we have a fairly major investment in formal data collection, but we also have a variety of other channels. So we're listening on social media. We're engaging with people on social media when it makes sense to do so. And social media wasn't so big for Kronos a couple of years ago, but we are seeing a rising tide of people who are following us or commenting, you know, engaging with us through Twitter, through Facebook, through LinkedIn. The other thing is we have product-specific advisory councils. We have mechanisms for customers to submit ideas for product improvements back into our organization. Kronos, William, and some people on the phone may know that we shifted very much to a industry go-to-market model a few years ago so that when we talk about our products and when we configure our products, we have developed experts in the primary industries in which we go to market. So those are healthcare, retail, manufacturing, public sector, and services and distribution. So those are the five big categories. Now, there are many sub-verticals, if you will, underneath those. So, you know, we have a team that just does life sciences, and we have a team that just does oil and gas. But the result of that is it's allowed us to get a lot smarter about the industries that we serve, which then causes us to make changes in our products and services that will better serve those industries. And again, you know, you got to balance the changes and the innovations that you make across a pretty broad customer base. But that what we call vertical go-to-market model has allowed us to get much smarter about what are the real problems people are trying to solve with our products. So we're hearing that back directly from those customers and from the sales and services people who serve them. So it's a lot of different channels, and you know, in my role owning the formal voice of the customer program, we're using a SaaS solution to host all of that feedback, and we've created a lot of industry and product specific dashboards for the people who make those business decisions, so that they have real-time information coming in from customers. It's not the only thing that we rely on, but it augments all of the other channels of information that we have and that we ask people to reference when they're making decisions about priorities.
You know, I'd also tell the audience, you all have a wonderful user conference in KronosWorks. I always tell people when I'm talking about usability and user adoption, I'm like, you know what, one of the things you need to do when you're evaluating a company is evaluate the user community. go out and look at the LinkedIn group. If you can, go to a user conference. If you can somehow see the breadth and depth of a user community, you're going to kind of know the company's stance as a facilitator to helping building those user communities. And some companies do a great job, and some companies don't. And I think the better companies are the ones, just personal opinion, the better companies are ones where they facilitate users getting together, and both online, offline. You know, they cherish users getting together. And so I would say that to the audience that that's also something that you all do really well. Joyce, we were going to talk about, you know, getting offline and disconnecting and things that we'd learn. And I really want to get to in the next 8 minutes or so. What did you learn? So first of all, the setup is you went to Australia with your family, got away for 3 weeks, and you disconnected, so you set some expectations. What did you learn both as an employee and also as a manager from being away from the office?
Yeah, I knew I was going to be away for 3 weeks. So, you know, the first thing is I had that discussion with my manager, who's the CM, the chief marketing officer at Kronos, 9 months in advance. So before I ever booked a plane ticket or whatever, you know, I had that conversation with my manager about what would it mean for me to be absent for 3 weeks during this particular part of the year. But, I mean, the things that I did in advance that I think helped me mostly unplug is, I mean, I have a good team of folks who work for me. I am always in pretty close contact with those folks. You know, we had a plan for what needed to happen in each of the areas I'm responsible for during my absence, because part of my job is social media. I blog. I had a plan for that as well. So I did not blog for Kronos while I was on vacation, but we created content before I went so that that content could continue to be published during my absence. But I did tell my family situation is that I have a husband and I have two adult children who are independent, so they don't live with us. They're out on their own. And so time together, just the four of us, is at a premium. And frankly, we haven't spent 3 weeks together without interruption in a number of years because of college, and then people graduated and moved away to other places. So this was a really big deal for us to really spend the time as a family and not have everybody distracted. So, you know, my commitment during the vacation was that I would not be reading my work email. The folks who work for me and my manager had my personal email and my personal phone number, and they all knew how to reach me if something was truly an emergency. So, and I, in my phone apps, I turned off the Outlook sync so I actually wouldn't be able to see the email on my phone. And, you know, I would say everybody in my family has a phone and a smartphone, and we all had our iPads with us on the trip. So, you know, we were all checking email. We were all active on Facebook and that kind of stuff. But for the first 2 weeks of my trip, I did not look at Outlook at all. Outlook is the email platform that we use here. And at the end of week two, I actually had a long ferry ride between the South Island and the North Island of New Zealand, and free Wi-Fi, and the devil overcame me, and I did look at my Outlook mail, and at that point, there were a couple of thousand emails. And, you know, frankly, for me, checking in and seeing actually that there really weren't any major issues that seemed to be unfolding that required my immediate participation, it actually was soothing to me to know that. So I did not engage with anybody that was emailing. I cleaned up a lot of email that I didn't need to do anything about. And I did tell my family. I mean, they were like, frankly, making fun of me. They're not little kids, you know. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, well, you made it 2 weeks. I guess that was pretty good for you. I guess the learning is there's always, for me anyway, there's kind of always that call in the back of my brain, like, are things under control, and am I doing what I am responsible for doing to keep things under control? And So I was pretty impressed with myself that I lasted 2 weeks, but I was not actually able to last the full 3 weeks. But to tell you the truth, it did not change the quality of my time or my experience to check in. It would have if I suddenly was right into the thick of feeling like I needed to respond to everything and get in the middle of things. So checking in for me, I think, was ultimately an okay personal decision. The world would not have fallen apart if I had waited until that first Monday back. But given that this is a busy time of our year, as the last month in our fiscal year, coming back to a couple of hundred emails instead of several thousand emails actually made my reentry easier.
Yeah, you know what's funny is being away and being off the grid can, for a lot of people, create a lot of anxiety. And so on some level, you have to kind of know yourself and understand your own anxieties and both the intended and unintended consequences of being off, quote-unquote, off the grid and what anxieties you're in. I see a lot of people that create kind of a they take basically 11 days. I've seen this twice in the last month where they take 11 days. So they take 2 full weeks, and then they take the first Monday off. And really they're there, but they work from home, and they clear everything out. So they have their vacation. They do their bit. And then they come back and have a whole day without the pressures of meetings and work and regular stuff, the rigor, where they just get cleaned up. And so it's something probably for the audience to consider is to have a vacation from your vacation or a day to recover. And I think the, you know, one of the things you describe is have to versus want to. So because you set the table, you know, 9 months in advance with your manager, you create some clear expectations and you got approvals, you did all that bit, which is smart. You then, it was have to versus want to. If you were in Australia and you had to do something on email, you probably would. It probably wouldn't have been that traumatic for you. But the fact that you didn't have to and you wanted to because it made sense for you, I think that's what a lot of employees and bosses, I think that's what we struggle with, is that balancing that have to versus want to.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, I would also say, I mean, I work for Kronos, and I continue to work for Kronos, and I'm obviously a fan of the company, but we have a pretty humane culture here around work-life balance. So, you know, the other part of that equation is I do work in an environment where people honor those boundaries. So when I declared, hey, I'm not going to be engaging unless, you know, you really need me to, and you all have the judgment to ascertain whether or not you really need me to, it might not have been as easy for me to disengage as long as I did if that weren't the case. So, you know, I was supported by both my teammates as well as my management in taking a break that was that long. And I also, you know, created a lot of, you know, good plans and backup strategies before I ever left. I mean, it would have been highly unusual if something really had gone significantly off the rails while I was gone.
Genius. Couple things. Make sure you follow the Workforce Institute's great work over there on the blog and the books and just everything that's done over there, podcasts, great stuff that's going on over there. Also, the Twitter handle, @WF_Institute. Follow Joyce on Twitter. Again, Joyce, thank you for the time today. You're always wonderful to talk to. And thanks to everyone that listens to Drive Through HR. And let's roll out to a little music. And everyone have a wonderful afternoon. Thanks, Joyce.
Thanks, William. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, everybody.